I'm not your friend or anything. Damn, you think that you're the man. I think therefore I am. I'm not your friend or anything. Damn, you think that you're the man. I think therefore I am.
Stop. What the hell are you talking about?
Hello, Wisconsin. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. As always, I am joined by Anya Esther and also a special guest in the booth today, Johnny Watermelon. Learning together about the radio biz and the engineering. Say hello to Anya and Johnny when you give us a call at 844-967-2789. Today's going to be a discussion of a Supreme Court case, the shadow docket, an injunction decision that came down 8 days ago, its implications for what is going on this very moment on Capitol Hill and all the good stuff in between, including Secretary Mayorkas's impeachment proceeding, which is, to put it mildly, a bunch of hoo-ha garbage. And even conservative legal commentators agree with me, so don't take my word for it. So we're going to get into all of that, but I have to share some breaking news with everybody. This just popped about 45 minutes ago and first reported by, I think it's called The Chancery, which is a news publication out of Delaware. The Delaware Chancery Court, which is Delaware's courts that handle proceedings dealing with Delaware incorporated businesses, just ruled today that Elon Musk's compensation package granted to him back in 2018 that made him the world's richest person must be undone. That the procedure was so flawed, the directors that approved it, the compensation committee that approved it, so compromised by conflicts of interest that it amounted to an illegal compensation package. The $56 billion compensation package advanced by shareholders and Tesla's board entitled Musk to stock options in the company as it hit specific performance targets. Shareholders sued Musk, alleging the process that led the package to be adopted was improper. The news was first reported by Chancery Daily. Just mentioned that. Musk issued a stern reaction on X, which he bought for $44 billion when it was known as Twitter. Never incorporate your company in the state of Delaware. By the way, that's where everybody incorporates their big companies. It's sort of like the gold standard for states of incorporation. In her opinion, Chancellor Kathleen McCormick wrote, "Judgment is entered in the plaintiff's favor," and that the plaintiffs were entitled to rescission, which is the technical legal term for undoing a thing. So rescission, or again, to rescind the pay package. In her opinion, Judge McCormick wrote that she would go boldly where no man has gone before and answer the question, does Musk actually control Tesla? That's a bit of a one-liner for you. She also wrote that the compensation approval process was deeply flawed, in part because of Musk's close ties with the people representing the company, including the chair of the compensation committee and another member of the group, both of whom Musk had working relationships for over 15 years. The group that approved the comp package also included their general counsel. Their general counsel is like your top lawyer for a business, who once served as Musk's divorce attorney. I just want that to set in for a minute for everybody, because I am not a divorce attorney, and a divorce attorney, should I be, I would not be Corporation Counsel of Milwaukee County, because those two things have nothing to do with each other. If you're a divorce practitioner, you probably shouldn't be general counsel of a multi-billion dollar corporation. So wonder why and how that guy got the job. I mean, this is absolutely incredible. The defendants proved that Musk was uniquely motivated by ambitious goals that Tesla desperately needed Musk to succeed in its next stage of development. But these facts do not justify the largest compensation plan in the history of public markets. Bow. Wow. Musk, maybe, you know, in a couple of months, not the world's richest person anymore. I wonder if that'll, you know, maybe tamp down the arrogance with which he proclaims his word, that of the Lord's, in oh so many topic areas. I don't know about you all, but I think this is just stunning. Maybe it'll take him down a peg. I mean, who approves a comp package for $56 billion? I don't, literally, unless you're turning water into wine and spinning yarn into gold, what are you doing that's worth $56 billion? Excuse me. I stumble over the B and the M because the B word's so hard to say here. I just think it defies imagination. No human being should be paid $56 billion. Nope. 844-967-2789. Some programming notes. This Thursday, really pumped because I'm going to have my friend, Greg Leon, executive chef and owner-operator of Milwaukee's James Beard, thrice-nominated Amelinda restaurant. Really progressive, interesting cuisine. Super pumped to talk to Greg. He has an incredibly prestigious James Beard nomination this week, being nominated for Best Chef nationally. Not just Best Chef Midwest, but Best Chef nationally. So really excited to have Greg join us. And on Monday, I'm going to be joined by Bill Christensen, who is running for the city of Milwaukee's comptroller's race. So join us for all of that. And if you'd like to join the discussion, 844-967-2789. Don't you all worry. Johnny is helping Anya out. He's learning the ropes, but Anya's not leaving me. I wouldn't let that happen. She's my partner in crime. She checks me good, and I need it. And we all love hearing from Anya. Let's jump right into the meat and potatoes of today's show. Last week, I interviewed Joanna Fracek, a good friend of mine, an immigrant, a lawyer. We learned a little bit about her personal immigration journey, her path to naturalization as a citizen, what all that entails, how difficult it was. And I thought it only appropriate to talk a bit about this crazy shadow docket decision from the Supreme Court that dropped on January 22nd, so 8 days ago. In this case is the Department of Homeland Security versus Texas. The decision was 5-4, okay? You know, what, pray tell, had the justices so split in their decision? The five in the majority ruled that the federal government can do its job. Can do its job, should do its job, and that the federal government's job to manage our foreign affairs, to protect our border, to control immigration, naturalization, and citizenship processes, those things are the exclusive purview of the federal government. That's what the decision meant. It's incredible to me that this was a split court 5-4, because this is standard fair supremacy clause stuff. Like, literally, these are some of the things that you learn as a first-year law student. It's crazy. Now, the specific factual context for this case was that the state of Texas had put up a whole bunch of razor wire to keep federal agents from approaching migrants that were crossing the Rio Grande and crossing into Texas. There was also razor wire that ended up, I don't want to get into the details here because they're so shocking, but because of some of the other areas where razor wire was enacted and the other barriers that the state of Texas placed, not U.S. Border Patrol, but the Texas government put in place, a woman and her two children drowned in the Rio Grande, and they drowned because federal Border Patrol agents couldn't reach them. Now, had they reached them, they would have been subject to the immigration processes. More on that in a minute. But this is pretty simple stuff. Let me read, you know, the money part of the supremacy clause here. Federal law shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Then there's an 80-year-old case, Hines v. Davidovitz, that states that the supremacy over the national power in the general field of foreign affairs, including power over immigration, naturalization, and deportation, is made clear by the Constitution. Reading those two things together, then, only the federal government is allowed to effectively defend our borders, define immigration policy, and detain and arrest migrants and those crossing our border. That is not and has never been the purview of state governments. This is not controversial. This should have been a 9-0 decision, but it wasn't. Now, interesting, just side note here, you may be wondering, who are the two conservatives that joined with the three liberals on the court to actually, you know, read the Constitution correctly? And those were Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Barrett. That is probably not too surprising. Roberts has shown a penchant to at least try to modulate the court to preserve precedent, to move in an intentional, deliberate, principled way. And Amy Coney Barrett has also shown an interest in trying to protect the legitimacy of the court. Of course, Alito, Thomas, Kavanaugh, and I'm forgetting the other one, because I'm so ticked off about it. Those guys not so interested in that. Not so much. Alito, Thomas, Kavanaugh. Who is the... I'm forgetting the fourth uber conservative. I'm sure it will come to me. Got a couple important messages coming up. And here's what. So the Supreme Court rules against Texas, says, no, Texas, you can't be enforcing our borders. You can't be detaining people. You can't be preventing Border Patrol from accessing the border so that they can enforce federal immigration law. I can't do any of that. Well, guess what the Texas governor did immediately thereafter? Basically issued a statement and said, fluff them. I'm going to do what I want to do here, and cited non-existent constitutional principles to try to support that argument. I'm going to tell you all about it. You're not going to want to miss this because, you know, apparently January is a good month for a constitutional crisis. And would it surprise you if I told you Congress isn't going to help one lick with any of this? Of course not. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're going to want to get in on this one because it's a wild ride, everybody. 844-967-2789. Give us a call or a text. You can join the melee this Tuesday afternoon. Articles, 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 that you remain unremarkable. Interviews, 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 when they say your name, I just act.
Did you have fun? I really couldn't care less, and you couldn't give them my best, but just no.
I'm not your friend or anything, damn. You think that you're the man.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join the conversation this afternoon. Can you believe what the heck is going on at the Supreme Court having to do with who has the right to enforce immigration laws and who has the right to lawfully patrol the border? Hint, hint, the Constitution says it's not the states. I can't believe that. And I can't believe the corollary disaster that's happening on Capitol Hill as we speak, which is President Biden is ready to sign a law negotiated on a bipartisan basis in the Senate that would give Republicans nearly everything that they want, including, and Biden said this on Friday, an immediate shutdown of the United States border. And I'll get into some of the details here. But Trump said, no, please don't do this because I want a campaign on the border. So the deal that Republicans, including House Republicans, would have signed, passed, adopted, put through for signature to the president's desk last year, they won't do this year because that's bad for Trump's campaign. Meanwhile, people are drowning. And apparently four of the justices of the Supreme Court forgot about the Supremacy Clause. And here's the other thing. It took the Supreme Court 3 weeks to lift the temporary restraining order that prevented federal border patrol agents from reaching the U.S. border. I want you to think about that again. No matter what you think about immigration or how you think we should solve it, Texas had received a restraining order from federal courts that prevented United States Border Patrol agents from reaching our southern border. What? That is crazy town. Crazy town. It is dangerous because four of them thought, no, 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 no. Let's just let Texas take over control of U.S. foreign policy, of our border patrol, of our immigration laws. That ain't the way it's supposed to work, folks. Not at all. And remember, this was one of those pseudo decisions that came down on the shadow docket. So no merits hearing, no arguments, no written briefs to the Supreme Court. The merits hearing is going to happen on February 7th. So mark your calendars, everybody. That's just around the corner. They're actually going to hear oral arguments. And here's the other thing. Not only was Texas acting, and here's a technical term for you, extrajudicially, meaning without any authority under the law, there is a decent amount of border crossers that are legitimate asylum seekers. And they have a right to have their asylum claims heard, not only just under U.S. law, but under international law. And again, we've heard arguments about fentanyl, all of these things, and we do have a crisis at the border. I'm going to talk about that today. But I just want to dispense with the fentanyl thing. Fentanyl is not being brought in by people illegally crossing the border. Fentanyl is brought in by legal U.S. citizens through your normal border crossing locations. Because if I'm a drug dealer, I'm not going to give my precious multi-million dollar stash of drugs to someone who might get stopped and arrested. I'm going to try to give it to the people that can get in legally. So just FYI, that's complete hooey. You may remember back when I did, I think about 2 or 3 days on the Supreme Court's shadow docket, I referenced work in a book by University of Texas law professor Steve Vladek. He also made some comments publicly after this crazy shadow docket decision where four Supreme Court justices no longer believe in the Supremacy Clause under the U.S. Constitution. Here's what Steve Vladek had to say. Whatever one thinks of current immigration policy, it ought not to be that controversial that states cannot prevent the federal government from enforcing federal law. Lest we set the stage for Democratic-led states to similarly attempt to frustrate the enforcement of federal policies by Republican presidents that they simply disagree with. That four justices would still have left the lower court restraining order in place will be taken rightly or wrongly as a sign that some of those long-standing principles of constitutional federalism might be at risk. So I want us all to just step back. The reason that the Supremacy Clause exists is not only that the federal government has to have a unified approach to foreign policy, not only that the federal government has to set consistent immigration policies nationwide, not only must the federal government only and exclusively be responsible for enforcing federal law. If it's simply up to every governor to decide what federal policies and laws and the manner of their enforcement that they prefer, what we have here, folks, is not a democratic republic anymore, but we have legal anarchy. And apparently four justices who swore an oath to the Constitution think legal anarchy at this moment in time is a good idea. Again, regardless, Democrat, Republican, independent, progressive, conservative, whatever you are, or uninterested entirely with politics and the Supreme Court, I will offer to you that this moment is existential for our democracy. When you combine this with the problems that I have outlined about the federal court's power, the Supreme Court's power grab about how it uses the shadow docket to change our rights overnight, how there seem to be no ethical controls over the Supreme Court at all, coupled with what it's about to do to agency deference, the deference to experts that help set regulations in our democracy, all of these things are very, very frightening. Harbingers of democratic doom. This is part of a broader effort by Governor Abbott in Texas, but the entire Republican Party, to make the border the only issue that matters in this upcoming election. And what I will offer to you today is that the border is indeed important, but what is much more important is how we go about solving this problem. Let's agree that we have a crisis. Let's agree that it's a problem that must be solved. When we have a crisis, I say, and I offer to you respectfully, that we must attempt to solve that problem as quickly as possible, and that no party should be excused from trying to solve the problem when a workable bipartisan compromise has been put forward simply to appease a presidential candidate. We'll dig in deep when we come back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Your comments, thoughts, opinions, always welcome. 844-967-2789. Wisconsin, do we believe in the Constitution or what? I mean, come on now. I'm going to go to those phone lines. If you've got something to say, if you are on hold, if you've been screened, stay there. I will be going to the phones. I just got to get through a couple more things because the facts here are just incredible. I talk about performative politics all the time on my show. What's performative politics? All politics is theater. All politics is rhetoric. But performative politics is when a politician does something that they know is going to hurt their constituencies simply because it may serve their interests by acquiring more power to them or giving them an electoral advantage. And the entire GOP is engaging in performative politics, and they are placing Ukraine, the security of the United States, the nation of Israel, our conflict with China over Taiwan, all at issue because the compromise bill that the Senate is ready to pass and that this president would sign, President Biden would sign and said on Friday he would sign, would provide funding for all of those things, Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and it would provide Republicans the bulk of what they have been seeking with respect to the border for years. It presents a great amount of concessions from a Democratic president. But let me get back to the Supreme Court very briefly because the law here is important. Greg Abbott, 2 days after the Supreme Court ruling, issued a statement that basically said, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. I'm going to ignore the Supreme Court. He says this, quote, I have already declared an invasion under Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution to invoke Texas's separate constitutional authority to defend and protect itself. By the way, that's not a thing. That authority is the supreme law of the land and supersedes any federal statutes to the contrary. The Texas National Guard, the Texas Department of Public Safety, and other Texas personnel are acting on that authority. That's garbage. Garbage. It doesn't exist. There's all kinds of law professors weighing in on this. He told the state guard to, quote, hold the line at Eagle Pass. That's the particular area that we're talking about. Aaron Rieschlin Melnick, a policy director at the American Immigration Council, noted that the judge, in reviewing some of these same arguments in a prior case that Governor Abbott just invoked, said that that would mean that state governments had more authority to wage war than the U.S. president without any congressional oversight, something which is, you know, obviously not true. I put a question mark on the end of it because apparently some of this stuff isn't obvious. Or if it is obvious, all these people are lying and acting in bad faith. Which do you think is more likely? Again, here's Professor Steve Vladek of the University of Texas, law professor. By this logic, states could use their own determination that, I quote, invasion exists as justification for usurping control of whichever federal policies they don't like. This is just a 21st century repackaging of nullification. And you don't know nerdy legal stuff. Nullification refers to South Carolina's attempt in the 1830s to declare federal tariffs null, void, and non-binding. That didn't go well. Andrew Jackson basically threatened to enforce the tariffs through armed force, and that ended that little debate. Yes, yeah, states don't get to nullify federal authority. States don't get to nullify federal law. I believe there were a few persons of color, children, students of color back in the day, and we sent National Guard troops to make sure that our schools were desegregated. Yes, yeah, states don't get to pick and choose. And here's what. Why is Greg Abbott fueling all this fire, generating a constitutional crisis? By the way, if you want a funny take on this, go to X and look for the series of posts that are, what are you wearing to the constitutional crisis, for a little levity? Some funny outfits being posted there. So we have a bipartisan bill that the Senate has negotiated that now Mitch McConnell has said in private Senate conferences and with negotiations with House Republicans that Trump wants the deal killed because they don't want to give Biden a win. That's what's happening. We have a deal to do the very things that Republicans want done at the border. But now Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, they're following Trump's orders. We're going to kill the bill because it'll give Biden a win. Here are some of the things that the bill will do. To be clear, current U.S. law does not grant President Biden the right to unilaterally close the border, especially to legal asylum seekers. I mentioned this earlier. Though it could be challenged in court, the compromise bill actually gives President Biden that authority. Should the number of crossings hit 5,000 average daily crossings in a given week, by the way, we've already hit that level. And so if this was passed, if we had a functional Congress, if we had a Congress that was interested in actually protecting our national security, actually interested in protecting our border, that bill would have passed the House and the Senate. President Biden would have signed it already. And as reported by the Washington Post on Friday, quoting from a statement President Biden released on Friday, should that bill be sent to him, he said he would sign it and immediately, quote, shut down the border on the first day that he was authorized to do so under the bill's terms. Here are the other things that the compromise bill that Donald Trump wants killed because it won't help him win the White House would also do. Add billions to help break the logjam with asylum applications and reduce the time to 6 months to get asylum applications done. And fourth, raise the legal bar on what qualifies for asylum. These have been things that Republicans have been asking for years. Let me put it to you this way. Governor Abbott is forcing a constitutional crisis because President Biden won't act on border security. But Speaker of the House Johnson And the leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, won't let Biden act on border security because Trump wants to run for the president on that issue. This is sick. This is sick. And just let's observe. You remember Donald Trump and Republicans controlled both the House and the Senate and the presidency for 2 years after Trump was admitted. Did they get an immigration bill passed? Let's see here. No, they didn't. Senator James Lankford, who is about as conservative as they come, he's a Republican from Oklahoma, has been the lead negotiator on this bill for the Republicans in the Senate. Here's what he has had to say. The bill focuses us on getting to zero illegal crossings a day. There's no amnesty. It increases the number of Border Patrol agents, increases asylum officer, increases detention beds. So we actually locked arms together with Democrats, and we said, we're not going to give you money for this until you change the law. We want a change in the law. When we're finally getting to the end, they're like, oh, just kidding. I don't want a change in the law because it's a presidential election year. He said, referring to Republicans. He continued, we all have an oath to the Constitution and we have a commitment to say we're going to do whatever we can to be able to secure the border. Senator Kevin Cramer, Republican of North Dakota, said this to CNN. I reject the idea that we would reserve and keep a crisis going till a better time to solve it. Senator Republican from Indiana, Todd Young. There are a number of us who won't be looking to third parties for assessing the propriety of passing these bipartisan proposals, referring to Trump. I don't see how we have a better story to tell when we have the opportunity to fix it. This is insane. Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina. Senator Mitt Romney, Republican of Utah. This is appalling, said Mitt Romney. Tom Tillis, if we fail to get this passed, I'm going to file the exact same bill if Trump wins and we'll have a majority of the Senate. I'll guarantee you that everybody who's against it now will be for it then. This is all about politics and not having the courage to respectfully disagree with President Trump and tell him this will help him, but that doesn't matter. I didn't come here to have a president as a boss or a candidate for president as a boss. I came here to pass good, solid policy that will help a president who is serious about securing the border. I could go on. There's more quotes. It's disgusting. David from Mequon, what do you say about all this? Are you as shocked by all of it as I am? Or does this seem like it's just business as usual?
No, I'm not surprised. To be honest with you, I will say this. I do differ with you on a couple of things, though. Number one, if you remember when Obama was president, when Jay Johnson was Homeland Security, 2,000 illegal migrants was considered a crisis back in the day. Now we're saying, well, we can up that number to 4,000 or 5,000 per day. And keep in mind, up to about 5,000 approximately, that would equate to about 1.9 million people every year. And if you look at 1.9 million and then you times that times 4 years, well, you have basically, if it was a state, a population, be almost 2 million people, not quite, bigger than the state of Wisconsin.
So I just want to correct something here. No one is saying that 2,000 isn't a crisis. That's not what Democrats are saying. It's not what President Biden is saying. No one's saying that 5,000 is an okay amount to have crossing. What they're saying is that this bill would trigger at that level the extraordinary authority for the president to shut down the border and effectively put into place extraordinary measures that don't presumptively credit asylum claims. So it's a little bit different. I also wanted to share a couple of facts with you. Hang on, David. Stick with me. Couple of facts. Okay. The Biden administration has removed, returned, or expelled more migrants in 3 years than the Trump administration did in 4 years. The majority of all Southwest border migration encounters throughout the Biden administration have been returned, removed, or expelled. Total removals and returns since mid-May exceed removals and returns in every full fiscal year since 2015. Does any of that change your perception? In other words, they're doing these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember when Obama was considered the deporter in chief. I do remember that, and people are very upset with that. And I will say this, I would say, and the fact of the matter is this has been going on for quite a while. I would not say this is just fully on the Biden administration. This has been going on for several decades now. And I think what's frustrating for me is the fact that because it has gone on for so long, it's like we've been kicking this can down the road. And I do agree. There's definitely politics at play there. I do not disagree with you whatsoever on that. Because it is an election year, and this is obviously, this is a huge concern, and now you're seeing some movement with this, finally, and I do think one of the things that was done that I thought was incorrect was, you know, we have a huge backlog of asylum seekers, and they don't have to show proof at all right now, so the system is overwhelmed, there's a huge backlog, right? And so I think it's imperative that the president right now currently talk to Ecuador, talk to Nicaragua, and say, okay, if you got asylum seekers, they got to have proof. Right now, they can't.
So let me, David, I gotta interrupt. I'm sorry. Please, if you can keep David on the line, I want to have this conversation. We've got to go to a few important messages. So technically, David, that's not possible. You can't, asylum is a legal thing that oftentimes people don't have paperwork. We can talk more about the process. I think there's a couple of important facts, but my question as we go to break for you is this. Does it matter that Republicans won't get it done when we've got a compromise bill? Welcome back, David. If you want to get in on this topic, I mean, this is the thing of the day, thing of the year, I'll say. And here's what David and I were talking about right before the break. What we're experiencing is an escalation of what has always been a crisis, what presidencies on both sides failed, even when they had both houses of Congress and the presidency, I'm referring to Obama and Trump, failed to get immigration reform done. And so we've got a presidential election year. We have a crisis at a scale that our country has not seen in a long, long time. And that means something can actually get done, that the reform that David's talking about can happen. And again, we can have a debate separately about whether or not these particular tools are the right tools. And respectfully, for purposes of our discussion, David, I'd offer you that what you're suggesting about asylum seekers won't work right now for the present crisis. But we've got this opportunity and it can get done. And there's one guy that's standing in the way of doing something to secure our nation's border. And his name is not Biden. It is Trump. Does that bother you? Because I agree with you. We got a crisis. Prior administrations have blown it, both the Obama administration and the Trump administration, when they had both houses of Congress. Should Trump be getting out of the way so we can do something about the border crisis, David?
I do think we need to get a deal done one way or the other, because even before the Obama administration, even the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, this has been going on, like I said, for decades. And at the end of the day, people have to realize we are diminishing what it means to be an American citizen by allowing this to happen to begin with, okay? Because there's people that want to legally, that want to come over here, they'll pay an outrageous amount of money to do it the right way. But when you can do it this other way, I understand why people would do it that way, because they're going to save a boatload of money. And two, the cartels are making a boatload of money right now, which is not a good thing. And you know, I do feel for the communities. We look at our neighbors in Chicago. We look at New York City, you know, with now the busloads of illegals being bused in from what the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, is doing. Denver, the same thing. You know, they're I was just reading an article. They got 40,000 illegal migrants in the city.
We have a crisis, right? We have a genuine crisis.
We do. Yep, we do. And so,
go ahead, David.
I was just going to say, I would urge that one thing. I would really say, okay, I think we should have an opportunity to look at this bill and really dive into it. And if we can tweak it and make it even better, I'm all for it, because enough is enough.
Yeah, David, I hear you. Enough is enough. Stop with the performative politics. Stop with not getting a deal done to help secure our borders because Donald Trump wants to beat Joseph Biden over the head with it. Despicable. Before 2013, here's another fact. The majority of non-citizens attempting to cross the border entered without being caught. Under the Biden administration, the estimated annual apprehension rate has averaged 78%, identical to the rate of the Trump administration. Here is what Mike Johnson has demanded. President Trump has echoed this, and that is that basically all people that are coming to our borders that don't clearly have a right to enter be detained. Okay? That is not possible. A guy by the name of Frank Bowman wrote for Just Security just this past week, for the federal government to detain all aliens with a pending immigration case would require a system, listen to this, an immigration system 12 times as large as the entire federal prison system and 50% larger than all federal and state prisons combined. That is what zero crossings mean. We don't have that money. We don't have that space. And even Justice Alito agreed. Due to the huge number, this is from a prior case earlier this year. Due to the huge number of aliens who attempt to enter illegally from Mexico, DHS does not have the capacity to detain all inadmissible aliens encountered at the border. And no one suggests that DHS must do the impossible. No one except Mike Johnson, because they know it's impossible. No one except for Donald Trump, because he knows it's impossible, because he doesn't want a solution. He doesn't want to secure the border. He wants to beat President Biden over the head with it. Lou from Cudahy, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
It's not surprising to me that you can always expect progressives, leftists, Marxists to air and support the kind of bad illegal conduct that's happening at the border, the chaos and the anarchy. You people are the authors of it.
Biden is saying he will sign the bill and he will shut the border down. Why is Mike Johnson objecting to that?
He's also bringing in all the criminals.
He didn't bring in Israel. The GOP did. They said they would not greenlight funding for Ukraine, Israel, or Taiwan without a border deal. Well, that says it all, folks. Again, apparently facts don't matter sometime. Mark from the SAC, you got about a minute, my friend. Make it quick and punchy.
Yeah, well, facts matter. And if Abbott and DeSantis and the other governors are shipping migrants up, points north, if those are illegal immigrants, then those guys are both guilty of trafficking and should be arrested for that particular crime.
I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. I'm sorry. That's all we've got. I will revisit this a bit tomorrow because I want to talk about the Mayorkas impeachment. I'm going to leave you with Republican Representative Chip Roy. We're going to grab this sound, Anya and Johnny. Anya and Johnny, we're going to grab the Chip Roy sound on our way out. This is what Republicans are getting done. This is out of a Republican's mouth from on the House floor, and it applies to the border crisis. President Biden, willing to act, will act, and it's not happening because Trump doesn't want it to. Here's what Republicans have gotten done.
I want my Republican colleagues to give me one thing, one, that I can go campaign on and say we did. One. Anybody sitting in the complex, if you want to come down to the floor and come explain to me one material, meaningful, significant thing the Republican majority has done besides, well, I guess it's not as bad as the Democrats.
And there you have
it. Me the line from Patton.
It is when he said, a Tuesday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show, breaking down the immigration debate. It ain't Biden. It ain't the Democrats. It's Mike Johnson and Donald Trump. It's all performative politics. The facts say it's true. Thanks much, everybody. I'll be back tomorrow.